tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
And we're waiting for B-dubs again. The episode started, though. So, hey, everyone. It's episode 148 of the Tsunami Escape Podcast, the most professional podcast on the face of the surface of the earth. I'm Greg Zeno. Tonight we have C. Kohler.
Hey, guys.
Mora.
Hey.
And B-dubs in, like, any time now. So tonight, there's no news.
Did you want to mention the DBZ anniversary thing?
Not really.
Okay. They're having a giveaway.
It's a giveaway. The stuff's probably bad.
Yeah, it could be a Blu-ray or something.
But people hate all the Blu-rays.
The new Blu-ray.
They're bad.
I don't know anything about them.
Crap. Like, I started it the second B-Dub said, hang on, I'm coming! And it's like, oh, now I don't know where to go. Also, everyone is sick. So I guess we should just start talking about Dragon Ball, huh?
Sure.
Dragon Ball Super, episode 108, Frieza and Frost, Mingled Malice. In this episode, welcome back, Chris Ayers. This is the episode where he finally takes back over as Frieza.
Yeah, very, very nice timing there, too, for this episode.
Just in time for him to be like, fuck you, brother, you're not the real Frieza.
Dude is a trooper.
Blast him out of the ring.
Is he, like, fully recovered, or...?
I don't think he's had his surgery yet.
Oh, okay.
So, I saw a picture of him recording the movie, and he was, like, all hooked up the stuff while he was doing recording.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the dude is dedicated.
That's pretty impressive. But, yeah, in this episode, Frieza is play-acting that he's turning on Universe 7... Then teaming up with Frost so that he can get the Dragon Ball wish at the end. But surprise, it's like a double, triple, quadruple cross.
Yeah, I knew it. Only Frieza could double cross Frost.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I have nothing much else to say about this Dragon Ball episode.
Well, I did have a question. The guy that they were fighting who does the instant transmission... How is it that everybody knows them?
He's a Yardrat, which are the same race that taught Goku how to do instant transmission.
But when did that happen?
The Android saga?
Yeah, like after he got killed by Frieza or whatever.
Between Namek before Androids.
Yeah.
Okay. I just don't remember that.
He just kind of showed up and was like, hey, by the way,
I can do this now. Yeah.
It's such a weird pull, too, to bring this race back, because, like, how are they in a different universe?
Exactly. Like, it's kind of weird, and it's never explained, and it's like, this could be a really cool story, but they're never going to do anything with it.
Yeah, like, it's not even Universe 7's twin universe. Like, right. It's completely different, unrelated, so... I mean, so it's kind of neat reference, but still weird.
I guess it means, though, that like even back then we knew there were other universes?
I mean, not really, but like I don't know, they can retcon the two. Oh, Goku wound up in another universe by accident. Or maybe these guys are just multiversal travelers or something.
Oh, well, that's just weird, because I was just like, how would they even know these people? They're from another universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. But anyway... He's gone. Frieza blasts him out of the ring. I think it was Frieza.
Yeah, I think it was Frieza.
It was definitely Frieza, right? It wouldn't be Gohan, the chump.
No, Gohan's too honest to do that. He'd rather lose than, you know.
But yeah, bye, Frost. You're not actually Frieza. And then he tried to go back in the ring, and then I forgot their fucking names. They were just like, bye-bye!
Yeah, it happened so quick, too.
One second he's talking, and the other second he's just like, Mm-hmm. I bet he's not coming back, even if everyone else gets brought back.
Yeah, I could see that.
Who, Frost?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's probably gone. I mean, he's kind of boring anyway.
Who needs Frost when you have Frieza?
Yeah, it's like, who cares anymore? Frieza's back, he's awesome, he's Space Napoleon.
Good old Frieza.
Oh, I missed him.
So do you guys want to talk about MHA?
Sure.
My Hero Academia, episode 47, All for One. In this episode, All Might gets a new job delivering pizzas because he sucks so bad at being a hero.
That's exactly what happened.
He has to deliver pizzas. Oh, wait. It's a pizza with a side topping of fist.
Yep.
And they went hard, huh? Yeah. Like, oh yeah, cool. We're already outside your door.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, what happened was someone else was at the door saying, knock, knock, there's a pizza. And then All Might came in from, like, the other wall.
No, I'm pretty sure it actually was All Might saying, pizza delivery.
And then he came in from the opposite wall because it's All Might. That's what he does.
Yeah, we get to see all the pro heroes doing stuff, which I thought, I've been looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Including this one dude who, like, just turns into, like, a wire and then just rearranges Black Mist's internal organs?
Pretty cool.
That's some fucking heavy shit.
It's awesome. That's what it is.
That's a power you'd expect a villain to have.
Yeah.
Especially the way he uses it.
Kamui Woods used his signature move to capture everybody.
It helped for a bit.
Yeah.
But
the plan was going too well.
Endeavor is literally just there to be like, okay, in case they fuck up, you're our only hope, dude, but you don't actually get to do anything. Yeah. And he's out there just like, what? Come on!
Well, he's pissed
off.
By
the way, we know all your names.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And he's pissed off, too, because he doesn't get to be in the limelight, because that's like the whole, that's the job, you know, is to be recognized.
Right.
But yeah, they even know everyone's name except Dobby, because that would be a huge spoiler, I guess.
Well, the thing is interesting about the name stuff, too. Well, not interesting, but just kind of like something I noticed is that they kind of like, and it was the police who did all the research to figure out who you guys were. It's like, okay, so the police do have a role in this world after all.
Like, I'm pretty sure the cops are there for, like, you know, to handle the basic criminals and shit.
Yeah, and they're just there to also do, like, more mundane things, like crime investigations and stuff.
Yeah. Remember, we're still the only ones who actually have authority to arrest people.
Yeah.
That's true, they do.
You guys are just meat. You guys are just slabs of meat.
They're like the SWAT team.
Yeah.
The heroes.
And then over at the warehouse, Mount Lady's wearing some car slippers.
I guess she did that so she wouldn't hurt her foot.
It also looks cool, so.
Yeah. And then she, like, grabbed those guys.
Yep.
Ew. And then everyone was like, great, everyone's got this. We can all go home.
Problem solved.
We win. Nobody else has to die today.
Oh, wait.
Oh, no.
And poor Ragdoll.
Oh, yeah, I did not like seeing that.
That was painful.
Guess I'm killing everyone in this room and then myself.
She's such a, like, she was always such, like, a really, like, cheery person. And you just see her, like, looks like she's, like, I don't know what's wrong with her now, but she's just out of it.
They took her quirk. Like, she's, like, yeah. A vegetable or something now.
Yeah, she's, like, brainless or something. I don't know what, maybe she's just knocked out, but whatever. It is not cool.
But yeah, here's All for One. He just kind of thinks
yes.
And causes 70 city blocks to disappear. So that's also, great.
And everybody's like freaking out. Like, it's like, I don't know if he's mind controlling everybody or what, but then I liked how that whole bit was just like an after credit, a post credits thing.
Yeah.
That was cool.
I mean, he's basically like the All Might of villains. So, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's called all for one.
Yeah.
It's that thing where Orochimaru looks at you and you see yourself die.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Is that what it is, really?
I think so.
It's just kind of like, oh my god, his spiritual pressure is so intense, I already saw myself die.
Okay. Oh, I've already heard of this guy, and he fucked up All Might, so I might not want to get involved in this.
And he's just, like, hovering there. Yeah, I mean, definitely feels like an end boss, like a, you know, the main villain has finally arrived.
Yep, it's definitely him.
Oh, yeah, next week's going to be real good, I guess, because we have... like the first half of the DB of the super special,
mm-hmm.
we have next episode of MHA.
Yep.
What do you mean the super special?
The next two episodes aired back to back in Japan.
Oh yeah, right. they were pretty hyped up episodes, which is kind of a bummer they didn't try to replicate the same thing here.
Toonami does not care.
No.
Yeah, but those episodes were like an event when they came out.
Yeah, it was like an hour long, like holy crap thing.
And then, oh, well, I guess those are the two hype episodes next week.
Yep.
Do you guys want to talk about Promised Neverland?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Promised Neverland, episode 3, 181045. In this episode, Sister Crone is here, and Sister Crone is a problem.
She is a beast.
And I mean that in multiple different ways.
Yes.
She's a problem because, oh shit, she just ran right through that tree trunk. Mm-hmm. And she's also a problem because, ew. And she's also a problem because they made it even worse by deciding that she's also a totally crazy person who dances around her room yelling, like singing loudly and talking to a doll.
She is not normal.
Which is what I would call too dumb to live.
And yet, there she is.
She was always crazy. It's just that they've unfortunately decided to add the whole bit with the dancing around in the doll, which was not in the manga.
And the singing.
And the singing, yeah. All of that was... She was crazy, but she kept it inside more in the manga.
She was crazy, but I always had the feeling that she was like a lot more... cunning in the manga, mm-hmm. and here they like there's just no subtlety at all.
It unfortunately undermines her character because you're right, she is more cunning in appearance and behavior in the manga, and here she's still smart and she's still cunning, but it's undermined by her like goofy behavior.
I don't know, I feel like the goofy behavior could just be a throw off sort of thing. Like it could just be her screwing around to like show them that, oh, wait, I'm not actually scary, but wait, yes, I am.
Well, the problem
to
is...
who, though?
She does that when no one's around, too, though. So
yeah. But, I mean, still, you don't know who's looking.
But that is the problem. You don't know who's looking or listening, and it's like, she's like, they gave her the room right between the three kids' rooms, and it's like, she's dancing around, singing very loudly, and it's like, dude, they can hear this.
And that scene was such an awkward way to, like, show us her character motivations, like her just shouting it all for us to hear.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, even though I'll stand by this as being a really good adaption, this is the one thing to me that's like, this is not how you should have done this. This was a bad decision. The way that they kind of undermine her character is not good. But to me, it's like a small thing in an overall great show.
Some kids found out about the harvest. Let me go around during the game of tag talking about it out loud.
Right. I think she's playing her cards with Emma there, so.
Yeah.
And speaking of Emma, let's just talk out loud about these tracking devices and demons and harvests when Glasses Girl is literally standing right next
to
you.
She was whispering to herself. I don't think Gilda heard her say anything in that scene.
But also Gilda looks at her like she clearly definitely heard what she said.
I think she just was looking over. See, the thing about that scene is that Gilda has something she wants to ask Emma. That's the whole thing. It's not that she's like listening in on her conversation or giving her the side eye. She's waiting for her opportunity to ask Emma an important question, but she never gets the chance. The scene, that's what her motivation and behavior is in that scene. I think everyone misconstrues that as her like hearing what Emma's saying. She didn't hear that.
But they're also, all. But with the whole glasses are, oh, you can't see the eyes behind the glasses now. It's clearly playing it up like, did she hear? Is she the traitor?
Well, that's more like she's starting to put something together in her head. But I don't think she heard anything. I really don't. I watched the scene again. Emma is clearly whispering to herself. And yes, we as the audience member are right next to her, so we hear it. But I don't think that Gilda, standing 4 feet away, heard that. That's all I'm saying.
What I'm trying to say here is that the complete elimination of inner monologue from any of these characters was a bad choice.
And yeah, I agree.
That's my problem as well. Like, the characters might not have heard it, but like, why risk it at all?
The problem with inner monologue is that it sort of slows everything down to a crawl and makes the entire show scene it's in just sort of halt completely.
I don't see how that's any different from the characters just talking to themselves. I mean, it's doing the same thing.
I think they could have done it with inner monologues, but I just don't know why they didn't. It's just a choice they made.
Well, they made the choice because people always complain about inner monologue.
Yeah, I just kind of like the outer monologue a bit more, is all, you know?
Well, coming from someone...
in this situation, outer monologue leads the viewer to be like, well, shouldn't you now be dead because somebody heard you?
Well, what do you answer that question, B-Dubs. You haven't seen this.
Honestly, I'm with you. I don't think she heard. I think it was just a matter of...
hearing it, the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it's not a matter of if they heard or not. It's just why would these characters that are supposed to be super smart risk at all?
I think that anytime they're speaking aloud and we're like, hey, you shouldn't be so loud, I think we're not seeing the precautions they're taking to make sure they're not going to get heard.
But you see, that's a bridge too far for the viewer to be like, well, they definitely wouldn't be doing it if they knew.
That's exactly what I thought when I watched it. I was like, if they're talking this loud, they must know it's safe to talk here.
And I'm saying that it's like, no, there's no way it's ever that safe.
I think that requires you to make a leap of logic that doesn't really need to be there to begin with.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we'll have to disagree on that. But
I'm saying the series is trying to like be a super paranoid thriller, right? And it also has to be like, the only reason these kids have any chance of getting away is because they're super geniuses. And now the kids are going to run around kind of blabbing out loud all of this stuff. It's like something there breaks down.
You have sound logic. I'm just saying that, like, it seems like a minor thing to me. I just don't really even think about it. I would be more concerned if Sister Crone or Isabella was just standing in the same room. Then I'd be like, what the hell? But since they're like in another part of the house, I don't even think about it.
Well, because this is a thriller, I always feel like they could suddenly just be standing there. Like,
yeah, but then you're making a leap of faith or judgment call on what's going on. Again, now you're undermining their intelligence by saying that they wouldn't be smart enough to know. I mean, I'm not saying the risk isn't there, but I'm saying they probably took the steps to make sure it was safe. Like, maybe we didn't see Emma look around before she started mumbling to herself, that's all.
Well, I mean, again, Gilda's standing right there.
Yeah.
2 feet to the left.
But again, I don't think that she spoke loud enough for Gilda to hear her.
At that point, you're just kind of saying, well, she was clearly speaking out loud to us, but I guess...
I mean, if you go back and watch the scene, she's not talking aloud. She's kind of whispering like this.
No, she's not whispering. She's like speaking softly.
Regardless, yes, in the perfect world, these characters would never say anything damning out loud. So I'll take your criticism there. Yeah, and I think the Sister Crone behavior to me is a way worse thing because it's like just odd and weird and unnecessary.
Almost ruins the character.
And again, like, they completely invented this whole cloth. Like, they looked at Sister Crone and they were like, you know, what she's really missing is dancing around talking to a doll.
Yeah, I think that the original authors would never have done that. Well, they obviously didn't. But I mean, like, if they were probably never asked, is it okay if we do this? Because I think they would have been the first to say, well, no, she can't do that. Because then, you know, there's all the, it kind of makes her seem less threatening. But I will say that she's still pretty damn threatening.
No, because I just think of her as a dumbass now.
I mean, there's been plenty of threatening dumbasses, you know?
Yes, but Mom is super threatening because you know she will never let anything slip. Ever.
Yeah, I think what they did is they kind of went further with Krona on her, like, kind of mental, being mentally unstable. But they kind of ratcheted it up, like, almost too far where it's almost like, what the hell? But, I don't know, B-Dubs, what do you think of her?
I honestly don't mind it all that much. Like, it's fine that she's a little more outwardly crazy, I think. Because in the, you know, medium that we're in, sort of the visual watching thing, you can't really be as subtle as you can in like a manga or a book or something because, you know, it's moving at a certain pace. The reader can't, you know, the watcher can't go back and reread a line like 12 times. You know, I think because of the way it is, you have to be a little more on the nose. And that things that would be on the nose in a book might be more subtle on TV. It's kind of like the curse of the adaptation is, you know, it's not going to translate one-to-one, and if you try, it's probably not going to work properly.
Well, maybe that was the reason they tried to change it.
Yeah, I think that is actually the reason.
So let's talk about the rest of the episode. So they basically, they found the tracking device, they believe. They found it in the little girl's ear.
Yeah.
And then they decide that they're going to use Tag as a way to get the younger kids ready for possibly escaping in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Ray is over here being like, hey, you know, these other guys suck. So
it also happens to be a way of showing them exactly how far they have to go. Later on, when Sister Krona joins the game of tag, it sort of shows them that, oh shit, this probably isn't going to work.
Well, it's just, you know, the kids have a long way to go.
Yeah.
They're getting caught by dumb shit like, look, there's symbols on these leaves. Let's go out of the bushes.
Whoops.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, they're going to have to trick the kids into going with them. Like, they're not going to be able to tell them out loud. Like, they said as much. So, like, they're not going to understand that, oh, shit, there's a lot of danger here.
The scene, too, where Krona catches up with Emma, and then she basically plays her hand to say, like, she made it clear in this episode that she's going to try to find out who the kids are and then turn them in and reveal that Mom, Isabella, actually isn't as competent as she is so that she can usurp her and take her place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Krona is here to be to like usurp the whole position of the house.
Yeah, she's desperate to be a mom, and even though she thinks that she could get in, you know, a good word from Isabella, now she sees this opportunity to kind of basically smear Isabella and take her place.
So yeah.
Oh, and there's a traitor apparently.
Oh yeah, and also someone's like, "Hey, there's probably a kid leaking some stuff to Mom."
It wasn't real clear, I think, for some people, because I was noticing this in the comments, that suddenly they had this idea that like, there may be a traitor. And then people were like, well, why, how do they get to that point? And what it was is that right after the game of tag, we cut to a shot of the main trio. And then behind them, you see the calendar kind of moving by, and you see all the dates in that month are marked off now. So it's been like 2 weeks, and they're like, nothing else has happened for 2 weeks. Sister Krone, Mom, Isabella haven't said anything or done anything to try to find out who was the one, you know, who went to the gate. And so that they think the only way that could be true is if they didn't need to.
Is if they already knew.
Yeah. And so now they're suspecting somebody may be a traitor. Someone may be a spy that's giving information to Mom.
So, yeah. It's definitely not Glasses Girl, who another shot of here is over here. She's like, ooh, you can't see my eyes behind my glasses.
The last 5 episodes of this series are amazing, like super stellar. I think we're going to be on episode 4 next. Is it 4 or 5?
Yes.
4. Okay. Yeah, and this is a good episode. Episode 4 is good. Episode 5 is better. Episode 6 is better. And then they just get so much better, and they just keep getting better and better. I'm really looking forward to these episodes. This next episode, though, is a really good one, too.
You know what's not a good one? Sword Art. Let's talk about it. Sword Art Online, Alicization, Episode 13, Ruler and Mediator. In this episode, when it got halfway through, I looked up and legitimately thought, wait, it isn't done?
No, it lasted so long.
And I'm not even lying.
I know. Like, we got to the commercial break, I'm like, oh, thank God, it's finally over. Wait, what? What time is it?
Oh, no.
It was so bad.
Started immediately with another exposition dump.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, last episode and this episode were just giant exposition dumps. Like, how much exposition do we need?
It's also just like, I don't understand was it like this in the light novel or something? Because, like,
I don't know.
Why would you not go to any effort to explain any of this until now?
Oh, this is absolutely just straight from a light novel.
Yeah.
And it's just like, go ahead.
It just says how sloppy the plot is, because it feels like they went, oh shit, there's not actually much going on right now, so we have to actually establish main villain and goal for characters.
Yeah, I think it's also a matter of they didn't want, like, it would have taken a lot longer to sort of establish all this information if they had wanted to, you know, sort of do it through action and discovery and, you know, sort of what we would call the right way instead of just dumping it all. Like, it would have taken them like two or three arcs, maybe a season
maybe,
or two.
Maybe this is maybe this adaptation is trying to be too literal then, because, like, there's stuff that's happened in this series that I don't think needed to happen. Like, Seda brought up a great point in the threads. Like, why did we even have that whole stupid attempted rape stuff? Like,
yes,
it didn't. It wasn't necessary.
All it did was go, oh, now Yu-Gi-Oh can, you know, do whatever he wants because he broke the control over his mind.
Right. And I don't know.
They could have done it another way.
They did tease. They did to be fair, they did tease the naked girl. Right. Once before, like, it was like almost a post credit shot of like her just in bed or something, and then they had teased the voice, which we learned in this episode was actually a talking spider named Charlotte. So these things were dropped in the past, but not in like a story way, just sort of like mentioning it so that it could come back later.
It was kind of foreshadowing it for later, but instead of like exposing this over the course of, say, three or four arcs over a season, it was kind of like, all right, we're just going to drop all this right here so we can get on with it.
Charlotte wrote in the in her web above Wilbur's pen, Flucklight.
Or Beater.
Yeah, and the way they foreshadowed like the naked lady, like, it kind of felt like an anime only edition. Because it was kind of brought up like in a post-credit scene, and it was never mentioned ever again.
Hey, here's this naked chick. Stay tuned.
Like, yeah, I'm not saying that you have to do it this way, but I think it would have been more satisfying to have these characters like the lolly librarian, like, I don't know, showed up or something, or been mentioned, or we got a scene with her like before this, because now her and the other girl or like,
excuse me, don't you mean lollybrarian?
Yes, the lollybrarian and the, I don't know what they call the other one, the administrator or whatever.
Right.
They are now the most important characters in this story.
And they come out of nowhere.
And they just literally drop them in our laps. Just
literally out of a door that appears out of thin air.
Yeah.
Like, how many episodes into the season are we? 10? 12?
Something like that.
But like a lot? it's a 25 episode thing, right? And we're about
it's a 50 episode arc.
Well, no, really, I mean, long. Like this specific stretch that we're getting.
Oh, I don't know how the arcs all work in this.
Look, all in all, in the overall, what's going to be actually animated, it's only a fourth of the way through.
Right. But, I mean, it's sort of like, I'm saying, they...
Yeah, it rings of like, it was made up on the spot. Like, the author was going down this road with Kirito and Yu-Gi-Oh! Going to this academy, and then just decided, well, I'm done with that. Let's do a new story now. This new story is now about the Lollibrarian and this other girl. That's where we're at now.
The Lollibrarian that wanted to be part of the harem.
The plot is now literally, hey, you have to fight through all these floors. Oh God, it's just Eingrad again.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, didn't we do that in season one?
Yes.
The academy stuff just feels like filler at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we could have done without all of that. It's just this weird thing where it's like, it feels like they didn't really know what they wanted to do for most of the season.
I'm going to go ahead and say maybe this plot doesn't flow well.
No, that's what we're saying, exactly.
Yeah, it like does this sharp right all of a sudden instead of sort of going, like if they had done these two episodes over the course of three or four, like small three, four episode arcs, then we'd all be saying, yeah, okay, it's fine. You know, we met all these characters before.
Or do it in a way where Kirito and Yu-Gi-Oh! Learn these things over the course of their actions rather than just having a conversation where it's just told, they're all told it.
No, that's what I'm saying, is you would normally do that, have them learn it over the course of going out and doing things over the course of like, I mean, these two episodes are about three or four arcs worth of information.
Exactly. And it's a lot. It's like literal, it's like, it's all of the world building necessary to tell this story told in two exposition scenes, one of which is an episode long.
Yes. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like an entire season's worth of exposition crammed into two episodes, when if they had just decided, okay, we'll just stretch this out over the course of the season and, you know, they'll go on adventures and shit, it would have been better.
See, I think one of the reasons, too, it was done this way, now that I'm thinking about it, is because apparently Yu-Gi-Oh! Is not allowed to know this. Only Kirito is allowed to know this information because he's not a real Fluctlight or whatever.
Because Yu-Gi-Oh! Would just immediately break into a million pieces.
Well, I mean, they could still swing it that way if they did it over the course of a season, you know? Like, it's not the first time one character's learned a bunch of stuff and the other one's been kept in the dark. You know, other shows have done this, too.
Yeah. Well, regardless, this is what we ended up with. So now the Lollibrarian has basically got her knights. Her Yu-Gi-Oh! And Kirito are now going to be knighted by her in order to take little tiny magic daggers to go kill the administrator naked girl, right?
Wait. I will say, don't forget, she's now also a part of the harem.
Yep. She wanted was a hug.
Thank God, a very long and overly long hug. Is what I'm saying.
It was really uncomfortable hug.
I was going to say that scene was about to go in a really, really bad direction, and then it turned out to be just a hug. And I was like, oh, okay, thank goodness.
Really dodged a bullet there.
Yeah.
Which is great because we're still, like, this show, we're still staggering around with, like, seven bullet wounds in ourselves.
Yeah.
So the whole thing now is that they have to fight their way up a tower? Is that what we think?
Yeah. A 100-floor tower. Because we have never done this before.
I didn't even catch that detail because I was zoning out throughout this whole episode.
Yeah, no, I caught it. And I remember going, wait, didn't we do this in season one already?
What did they do to their swords? She did something with their swords.
I remember this. This is actually... this would normally be really cool if it was any other series, but now it's kind of bullshit. Because it's here, they can draw out the latent power of their swords and have new abilities because of that.
So they just got their swords upgraded.
I mean, yeah, basically. Like, they got new super moves is what happened. Like how Kirito's sword was made from the tree that, you know, was absorbing all the energy and shit. And now apparently it can...
Wait, what?
Well, yeah, I mean, that big old Kirito sword was made from the very top of that tree that, like, absorbs all the energy and shit that Yu-Gi-Oh! Was cutting down.
That is like a million years ago.
It really is. But now apparently it gives him an ability that I don't know what it is, but I presume it'll have something to do with that. And if it doesn't, it's bullshit.
Oh, yeah. By the way, the Librarian wants to also destroy the world, but she tells Kirito, hey, you can pick like 10 people to save.
Oh, right. Yes, I do remember that now. She basically wants to genocide the entire world because it will stop all of their suffering.
No pressure.
And I'm kind of like, this sounds familiar in some way, only slightly less horrible. That's a joke you'll understand in like a year in another series.
It's also revealed that Wrath's whole plan was to have the evil orcs attack the good floodlights.
Yeah.
As a test.
Right. Like Wrath wants to see if the floodlights will break the rules. And so they keep applying pressure. The problem is that they have floodlights that have broken the rules. They just haven't gotten to them fast enough. You know?
Yeah.
We need the drone flying floodlights now.
Yeah. Like they could, like Yu-Gi-Oh! He's done it. If they, you know, like if they swooped in now and picked him up, you know, they wouldn't need to have the orcs do their thing. They could just take them and study them and there you go. But they're not paying enough attention because they're off, like, I don't know, jerking off, what's his face? You know, the guy from the villain from the first season.
They're playing around with their trying to make robots.
Yeah, like, no, it's like Kaiba's sitting around putting boobs and bombs in boobs, and, you know, he's too busy to, you know, do his thing, because he's totally still alive, I swear to God.
Look,
he's somewhere in all
in there. He's definitely in there as a floodlight. Come on.
Abso-fucking-lutely. What if he's Yu-Gi-Oh?
No.
What if... You don't know that. That would be a fucking heel turn I'd watch.
I feel like I would have heard about that.
Yeah, we probably would have. But in that fact, would be a fucking
probably
amazing.
Would have heard about Kaiba if he was actually in this.
I mean, we don't know yet. Like, I actually went and tried to look at what happens in this arc in like the books and stuff, and they're still not done being written. So we don't know. He could show up.
All right, we'll keep holding on to that dream, I guess.
He is totally involved in some way.
So how many days has it been in the real world? Has it been like a week or?
It's probably been a few months in the real world because it's been literally years.
I don't know. I want to say a couple weeks tops.
Okay.
Well, like they're at like 500 times speed, you know, like.
Yeah. Time is way faster in the virtual world.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, couple days, couple weeks, I don't know.
Asuna left, or is she still there?
Yeah, she left. She's back in Japan, hanging out with the rest of the
fuck did she leave for?
Well, she's like, well, I guess I can trust you guys.
Yeah, especially the nurse with the resting rape face. But, like, she totally didn't go like, yeah, don't worry, I won't rape him while he's in a coma.
Maybe. Sword Art Online is bad.
It really is.
The fight scene that we saw between the Librarian and the Administrator, like, as bad as that all is, writing-wise, the animation was really good.
I know.
It was so boring, though.
I mean, here's the thing. The people animating this show deserve a better show.
Exactly. I just remember thinking when I was watching it, I'm like, this animation is way too good for this show. It doesn't deserve to look this good.
Well, it's wasted on people yelling system call, create.
Oh, God.
That's all it was.
Like, these are the guys that should be working on One Punch Man Season 2, and the guys working on One Punch Man Season 2 should be working on this.
No, actually, the guys working on One Punch Man Season 2 should be exactly the same people who worked on One Punch Man Season 1, and nobody
Well, yes.
In a perfect world,
In a perfect world, yes. But in the world we have, I'd make the switch in a heartbeat.
Agreed.
JoJo. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Diamonds Unbreakable, episode 33, July 15th, Thursday, part 3. I can't get over this title.
How many more parts are there?
I think it's only a four-parter.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, like Jotaro's finally started moving around and, you know, doing things.
So in this episode, guess what's in the paper, guys? It's a fucking gun.
Because that totally makes sense. Like, there's nothing on the paper, and then he turns and he's like, it's a paper. It's got a gun.
This is, like, to me, and I mean this in kind of a loving way, but, like, this is the dumbest stand power I've ever seen. Like, it's so stupid. Like, in so far as that, like, he doesn't put a gun in the paper. He puts a gun that will shoot someone in the paper. Yes. So, like, the gun is, like, going to shoot someone on its own because it's in the paper.
Like, how the hell did he even pull that off?
And the same thing with the paper with the gun.
Say what?
I thought he was in the paper with the
gun.
No, it was just a gun. I thought I saw a hand holding a gun.
The paper had a gun, and it tried to
shoot
him.
He had a loaded gun in the paper that, when opened, will shoot. Okay. It's so stupid.
Not when opened.
The paper was opened
and then turned around.
Yeah, it did turn towards him too, which doesn't make sense. And it's the same thing with the taxi driver. Like, he unfolds a piece of paper, a taxi pops out, including a driver.
And what? This guy could have been in there for, like, weeks.
And he didn't care at all. He was not even... Business as usual. Yeah.
Well, he definitely wasn't, because he just got the power, so...
Whatever. It's just... Why didn't that guy go, what the fuck?
What?
That's pretty goddamn awesome.
He also, like, somehow put, like, acid and fire in the paper.
Yeah, he puts fire. I mean, it's just this power.
How much prep time did this guy have with this power if he only got, like, 20 minutes ago? What, he got his power and he's like, yes, I understand what I must do. I need acid, I need fire, I need guns.
I need a paper shredder.
Yes.
He put a paper shredder in paper. A paper shredder that for some reason can't be turned off.
Like, how much?
How is it turned on to begin with?
Something. I don't know. It's exactly. Something. Like, how much prep time did this guy have? It feels like he's been getting ready for this for like a month and a half.
He's been preparing for this his entire life.
The prep time doesn't bother me as much as like the physics breaking abilities of the things he puts in the paper.
Well,
like,
I mean, it's a fucking stand, you know?
But I'm just like, this is like the dumbest stand, because like, I could understand like opening a piece of paper and having a gun fall out, but not a gun that like on its own will turn to shoot someone. It's so goofy.
It's the fucking best. I mean, it's like, it just feels like this guy had this power for like the last month and he spent that time getting ready. Like, he somehow tracked it. Now, guns in Japan is, like...
Hard to get!
Yeah, it's, like, really fucking hard to get. Like, it's easier to get a gun in New York City than it is a gun in Japan. And it's really fucking hard to get a gun in New York City. Well, I mean, you know, you drive out of state and, you know...
So what's
you
your point?
It's really fucking
hard. I would say it's harder to get a cheap apartment in New York City than it is to get a gun in Japan.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
The point is that he had a gun?
Yeah, like, that is a hard thing to fucking get in Japan, because it's like, even the fucking Yakuza are like, man, I don't want to carry no gun.
How,
they catch
how hard
me, I'm
is
going
it to
jail
get,
forever.
How hard is it get a taxi cab with a driver?
I imagine just as difficult.
that you're somehow going to fold into a piece of paper.
Yeah, like this entire thing is bullshit. And I'm just like, how the hell long has he been planning this?
And just to be fair, like, I don't mind it. Like, it's JoJo. Of course it's crazy.
Amazing.
But it's just of all the power-ups I've seen, this is the one where I can't. Even for a JoJo stand, I'm kind of going, come on.
Man, dude, there's some...
This feels a bit ass-bully to me, but whatever.
Oh,
I mean, it's very much like the sort of power that when you start scratching under the surface, you're like, wait a minute.
So Josuke actually loses here. He gets trapped in a paper, and then suddenly the Highway Star guy is our protagonist. Didn't expect that.
He doesn't do very well.
No, well, look.
He saves him.
He does okay, but
he saves the day. Like,
yeah,
he pulls out.
I think you're wrong, B-Dubs. He actually did it.
Like, he pulled a straight up JoJo, like, gotcha this time. You did exactly what I wanted you to do and turned me into paper so I could go inside this paper shredder and pull out this other paper. This fight is so dumb. I love it.
The only reason it isn't unexpected is because that's what happens in this series. Every bad guy turns into an ally in part four.
Especially in part four.
Yeah.
Except the Enigma guy, because he gets it pretty bad.
No, he's a book now.
Oh, yeah, he's a book that you can get at the library.
Like, did he really deserve a fate worse than death?
Hey,
I don't know. Like, the rock guy has it worse. Like, he can...
Well, he was just a garbage person. Like, he was a rapist murderer.
Like, dude, if you don't want to be a book for the rest of your life, or maybe for longer than the rest of your life, don't fuck with Josuke's mom.
Yeah, and don't fold guns into paper and shoot people.
I will say I am disappointed in this series for not having more of Josuke's mom, because when the series started, I was like, yo, she's the best character here. I love her. And then she like sort of vanishes, and I'm like, dude.
Wasted potential.
Yeah. It's kind of just like one of those things. It's like, we could have done better here.
Meanwhile, Rohan's got a monkey on his back.
Yeah, Rohan fucking killed a guy.
He did.
He had to see the back. He had to see it.
I don't think he knew he was going to kill him, though, right? I mean, it was
but he totally murdered that guy.
If Rohan could have... Literally, the entire thing just falls apart if Rohan... Well, that's the thing. Rohan was never going to not have to look at that back.
Yeah, I mean, he was going to look eventually.
So was this guy not an actual stand user sent to fight Rohan? He just showed up?
So here's the thing. He's a stand user, but he's the shittiest stand user, in that his stand is, he's so garbage, he can't even control his own stand, and it just kind of uses him.
Yeah, like it does whatever
the fuck. Was he not shot with the arrow?
He was shot with the arrow.
Yeah. Yeah, he was shot with the arrow. He got the stand, but he was like...
It's basically a parasitic stand.
Right, and now the stand's like, I don't even need that guy anymore. I'll just jump onto anyone's back.
So it was just a major coincidence that he was the dude that was sent to fix Rohan's house or whatever he was doing.
I believe so.
Yeah. The arrow was smart.
Yeah, that's about right.
Maybe the photograph dad guy knew that this guy was going to Rohan's house, but other than that, I have no idea.
Well, I mean, it would also be like pretty like, oh, and he's also a stand user in raiding.
Yeah. Like,
no, the photograph dad guy knows that Rohan's a stand user, right?
I mean, he couldn't just shoot any architect going to Rohan's house and have them make a stand.
Why not?
Well, because then they would have just died.
Oh, that's actually what you mean. Because it doesn't always work. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. It's a super huge coincidence.
Hey, it was fate.
Yeah, super.
Yeah, lucky. And that's when the stand users attract stand users, absolves everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, we can get away with anything now.
So, yeah, he's got this guy stuck on his back now. So, and I guess if anyone looks at his back, then that guy will. That stand will jump away.
Yes, yeah. And also kill him.
But this is what's weird, is that like now we're introduced to, again, bizarre, I should just say, this is bizarre, that now we have free roaming stands that don't even need a user, and stands, and a person can have two stands at once.
Yes. Like I said, it's easier to think of it as a parasitic stand.
Yeah. Like, there's an example that I could use here, but
well, there's an example in part three, like that sword.
Anubis, yeah.
It's right,
yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. I guess, there's precedence for this.
Also, wasn't there like another one that was just like pure only the stand?
I don't remember.
And maybe in the first half of part three. No, I can't. I'm probably wrong.
Yeah, I definitely remember the sword thing being weird because it didn't have a user.
Yeah.
Or it was the sword had the stand. Hey, he hadn't decided how stands worked yet.
The sword was a stand, and it just did whatever the fuck it wanted.
Basically. So now all it's going to do is just be like, hey, burn the pictures. Hey, hey, why are you hitting yourself? Hey, hey, hey.
Yeah, I gotta say, Cheap Trick doesn't sound annoying enough in the dub. Like, I remember him sounding so annoying.
You mean Cheap Trap?
Oh, yeah.
It's got to sound like, hey, you should burn the pictures. You should really burn those pictures, dude. Hey. Yeah. Why am I annoying?
The localization team is doing us a favor by not having him, like, ear-piercingly screeching constantly.
Yeah, but he's got to sound like you just want to kill yourself listening to him.
So he should just be Mineta.
Oh, basically.
Yeah.
Hey, you should go look at pictures of cute girls. Like that. I actually really love the Cheap Trick fight in the manga to the point where I might actually put in my top 10 stand fights.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. I really like how it resolves, too.
But they cut out, like, one of my favorite parts. So.
Oh, really? I've only seen the anime version. I did like it in the anime.
They cut out an entire part where Rohan eventually falls asleep, and then Cheap Trick calls, like, a rice wholesaler, 7 different grub hubs, like the fire department, like a doctor, and they all show up to Rohan's house at the same time. They all walk in at the same time, being like, your rice is here, your pizza's here, where's the fire? They all open the door at the same time and peek around it, and it's great.
It's just mean-spirited.
It's just the dumbest thing ever. I love Cheap Trick. But, yeah. Black Clover. Black Clover, episode 67. A fun festival double date. Oh, man, with a title like this, you know you're in for some shit. Shit like incredibly awkward singing.
Yep.
What the fuck? Singing always goes well.
What the fuck was that?
I mean, the girl who did the singing, like, it's not like she's not good at singing. It's like the lyrics and the premise is like, oh my god, this is so cringeworthy.
Oh my god. Yeah. Only medieval peasants could possibly enjoy this, which is great because it's all medieval peasants at the festival, so.
Yes.
I don't think anyone here would know this, but was this filler?
Maybe.
Probably not. So.
It just smelled of filler to me.
I mean, it probably feels like bullshit.
I guess it couldn't have been because those two characters got their, you know, wounds healed.
Dude just
or whatever.
Showed up with his leg in a jar.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He just carries his leg around in a jar and is like, yeah, it's cool. I got it
right here. I brought my leg in the jar to this festival.
Just in case.
That's not weird.
Just in case. Like, I forgot his leg even got cut off.
I definitely remember that because his whole thing is like he's a dancer.
I thought he like broke it.
Oh.
Yeah, that was Veto being a huge dick. He was just like, oh, you like to dance? Cut off your leg. Oh, you like to sing? Throat slap.
Break your larynx.
Larynx.
But anyway, they're healed now because apparently you can just take the Witch Queen's magic string power and just put it in a bottle.
Was that set up at all? Like, did we ever see Asta do that?
No.
No.
No, he just had it. He had it because the writer didn't think about it until he needed it.
It's like, oh, but I suddenly decided I want these people to be healed. Put some of this witch's healing magic in this bottle. Okay.
So we got more stuff about royalty and, yeah.
Hoff, 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 hoff. Hoff, hoff.
Stupid peasants.
I'm very royal. Hoff, hoff, hoff.
And then the water girl is like, Noelle. She's like, yeah, don't be like that. I'm a royal and I'm not like that. Yeah.
Got more typical shonen love triangle shit.
A lot of that, yeah. Except this time it's a little different because the water girl actually isn't interested in anyone. She just wants to get Noelle, you know,
she wants to hook up.
She's like going up to Noelle and Asta being like, now kiss.
Yeah. Which that'd be good if it actually was going to go anywhere, but considering this is shonen, it's not.
Yeah. Noelle's going to probably still hate or still be tsundere about about Asta for the next 500 chapters, probably.
At a minimum.
And then that stupid dancing guy just kept, so annoying. Just, oh, my beautiful queen. Oh, my beautiful queen. I got these roses for you.
I didn't even know that was a thing, that he had a crush on her.
I think they made it up. I think he saw her in this episode and was like, fell for her right then.
No, I think he had it back in the cave, in the
endless. Oh, he did? Okay. Well, I'm not giving the show enough credit.
Right. I think that was like, what, a year ago?
Yeah. But then, at the very end, the best character shows up, but he's about to duel somebody, and I don't know who this person is.
It's Jack the Ripper. Literally, I'm not kidding. His name is Jack the Ripper.
Oh, God.
Have we seen him before?
He's
or?
The captain of Ha-Ha's squad.
Who?
Ha-Ha.
Oh, yeah, who? Remember Ha-Ha was in this episode? He was running the funhouse or whatever.
Wait, which dipshit was that?
Ha-Ha!
If you come on, B-Dubs, you know the guy who always goes, ha-ha.
No, I don't.
Remember that one dude at the very beginning who tried to take advantage, who's like, hey, Asta, at the tournament, at the exam, he's like, Asta, I'm your friend, only I'm not. I just want to take advantage of you. And then he got his ass kicked, and now he's in the green praying mantises, and he's always kind of there. And he says, ha-ha.
Kinda.
That's like his catchphrase.
Well, like, there's a million fucking characters, and this has been going for, like, a million fucking years, so it's like, you know.
He's probably one of the more tolerable ones.
Yeah, he's actually not that bad a character. I don't mind when he shows up. Oh, and there was, like, a shot, too, where, like, some little kid was remarking to the Marilyn Manson guy. He's like, I like your mask! And then you just hear him whisper, he's like, that's my face.
It's not a mask.
And then everyone's like, dude, child, do not get close to that guy. Yep. When they really should be more worried about Ghosh.
Yeah.
They should, but... No.
Boruto. Boruto, episode 28, Declaration of War, on the Leaf Village by some dipshits. This is going to go well for them, I can tell.
They have not thought this through.
No. So, yeah, this dude shows up and just kind of is like, hey, Kagura, you're going to work with me. And Kagura's like, no, I don't want to. And he's like, yes. And Kagura's like, okay, I guess.
He's like, now I have to.
I guess.
Because I saw your scar.
Oh, no. The scar compels me.
I'm indebted to you for reasons.
I think Kagura is a badly written character.
No.
This arc is not working for me. I've liked this show for the most part, but this is just, I don't even get what's...
It's a little silly.
It's just not good. I don't care about the hidden... Cloud Village and their stupid
not
racist
even the right
people.
Village.
Like, I don't care about them.
You don't even know what village.
Yeah, the motivations of the villains are pretty lame.
The motivation appears to be basically, hey, remember that time we murdered a bunch of kids? That was cool.
Let's
we should
do it
declare
again.
War on, like, God so we can do it again.
Because, you know, they can totally beat Naruto. Like, it's impossible for him to, say, defeat the entire village in one hit.
I mean, the way I'm reading it, it's just that, like, it's just these people who have hatred and they can't give it up. They're like, I don't want to live in a peaceful world. I want to be at war.
Yeah.
And apparently there's other places that also can't deal with this and want to be at war. And it's like, why?
Yeah.
Because war.
And see, I can understand like the young and like the point being like the younger generation who were born in the post-war world being like,
they don't get it.
Yeah, they'd be like, "What are you? Why would you do this? This is stupid." But then the problem is like in this little arc, they've introduced these young ninjas who are like warmongers too.
It makes sense for the young ninjas to be the warmongers. I feel like
why
it's the old one? Well, I mean, they don't know, you know, like how bad it is. They hear the old war stories, and it's like, oh. we're never going to get to be that.
Well, they're
cool
like kind of like neo Nazis. They're like seduced by the concept or something.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And it's like the actual guys should be, you know, the ones that are like, whoa, we worked really hard to get rid of all those people. What
like I think about
you?
Like Boruto and his friends are all like, they're pretty happy with the way the world is. They don't want war.
Like they don't give a shit. They're like, nah, I'm okay. It's fine.
I don't even want to be the Hokage. Fuck him. He's a loser.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, they're just trying to incite a war with the Leaf Village, and the reason I think is that they just want war.
Yeah.
Or either that or they, because they lost, but I don't think they lost.
No, there wasn't even, they didn't, like, literally it was, hey, everyone, all the villages came together to fight Madara at the end of Naruto Shippuden, and then after that they were like, hey, you know, this whole constant war stuff kind of sucks. And also, you guys are kind of cool. Why do we have to fight? Let's not do that.
Yeah.
And so they didn't. And now everything's great and super high tech.
Yeah.
And also, the Mist Village doesn't kill children constantly.
Yeah, this is all great. So what's the motivation here?
I don't know.
Blood Mist!
They think Blood Mist is cooler than Peace Mist, I guess?
It's cool.
Now, anyway, the point is, this is not a very good arc so far. I am not digging it.
It's really
hard. I didn't really care much for this arc when I first watched it, but I do think it has a pretty cool fight towards the end, but that's about it.
How far away are we from the end of this arc?
Oh, it's not long. That's probably the one good thing I could say about it is, like, most of the Boruto arcs aren't super long, so they don't. If you're not digging them, you're not going to be spending months watching it.
These guys claim to be the new seven ninja swordsmen, but they're definitely going to get their asses kicked by some Leaf kids who aren't even actually ninjas yet.
Yeah. And they're going to be, I mean, they're like, yeah, we can totally beat Naruto and all those, like, legendary godlike figures. It's like, dude, you can't even.
And the air pressure just blows them off the face of the planet.
Yeah, exactly. Like, these guys are, like, not even close to being in the same stratosphere. Like, the series has literally had to make up excuses for why Naruto can't just fight all the bad guys and solve Boruto's problems for him.
It's got paperwork to do.
I was gonna say that. I've got so much paperwork.
God damn it, I want to fight the really strong guy, though.
He's got to pay the taxes.
Hey, Naruto's not Goku. He's not, like, constantly having to fight strong dudes.
I know, but he'd really prefer to fight strong dudes, I feel like.
No, he wouldn't, actually.
Well, I mean, paperwork versus fighting strong dudes, I feel like...
I feel like he'd rather not do he'd rather spend time with his family. And
I mean, don't confuse him with Goku.
Right, his list of priorities is spend time with his family, but there have been times when he's like...
he'd rather travel the ninja world and make it a better place.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, there's a hierarchy, like, he'd rather spend time with his family or travel the world or, you know, stuff like that, but I feel like there has definitely been times when the series has gone out of its way to make sure that he can't get involved in a fight that he would easily be able to finish. Like, if you remember that giant summoned monster, he was like, all right, I'm going to get up and go take care of this. And they're like, you can't. And he's like, why? It'll take me 10 seconds. And they're like, reasons. And so Boruto had to do it, and he almost got killed. And everybody's like, well, you could have done it in like 10 seconds. And he's like, well, they wouldn't let me.
I feel like this is going to be a recurring issue where Boruto is going to solve everything. And it's like, man, none of these things were actually very threatening if Boruto could solve it.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you know, if his dad wasn't busy with paperwork.
Well, I get the impression that Boruto is going to be putting his talk no jutsu to the test here.
Boruto did a pretty cool move this episode.
Oh, yeah, that was actually pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
I think, again, I think I've said this before, but, like, if I had to choose between Boruto and Naruto, I definitely prefer Boruto as a character. Like, he's not as dumb as his dad, and he also, it seems like his motivations are more relatable.
I guess. It's, like, my thing with Boruto is he doesn't have the like, his motivations are more relatable, but at the same time, they're not as strong as Naruto's. Like, Naruto's motivation kind of drove him forward, and in a way drove the series forward until sort of, you know, the Akatsuki showed up and kind of overrode it, you know?
Well, I'm just saying that, like, I get Naruto's whole thing was that he wants to be the Hokage. Yeah, I get it. He wants to be the greatest ninja Hokage. That's his whole motivation. And that and, like, friendship and stuff. And Boruto just seems like more like an ordinary kid to me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe he's a bit
more laid back.
Yeah, more laid back, right. Maybe more maybe brash sometimes, but always honest, right. And also more willing to listen to people and not just be stupid. Like, the main thing is he's just not as dumb. He's just actually got more of a head on his shoulders, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that's putting it mildly, but yeah.
So, yeah. Kagura is dumb. What the hell is up with you, dude?
Who can tell?
Fuck you. Naruto Shippuden. Naruto Shippuden, episode 247, Target, Nine Tails. In this episode, more good backstory, because Kushina is a great character, guys.
God damn it, couldn't we just hang out with her more? We have to go back to, you know, whatever the hell we were doing.
Yeah, unfortunately. So anyway, she was brought to the Leaf Village to be the Jinchuriki for the Nine Tails, and if you... And also, we just kind of made this up because there was a whole village and something, and it's like, oh yeah, there was the Land of Eddies, and they're even on our uniforms, but also, we just made this up, so.
You don't think that the brilliant Kishimoto had that in his back pocket all these years?
No.
Probably not, no. Like, it could have been pretty cool, like, to do an arc with, like, you know, the remnants of, you know, that village, and it would have sort of given him an excuse to meet people that he might have been related to and, like, been a good source of drama, but then we didn't do that, and, you know.
I'm not sure if he actually had any of that, like, planned, but, like, the whole Uzumaki thing, like, why Naruto seemed to be, like, the only Uzumaki around.
No, there's one more. There's one more.
That's what I'm saying, though.
Slippery When Wet is related.
Yeah, that's what I mean, though. There had to have been other Uzumakis around at some point.
Mm-hmm. And they all have a crush on Sasuke.
And this is also the point where he's just like, oh yeah, also Uzumaki was a huge important clan, definitely. It's not just a name that I made up one time.
So, yeah, we're getting backstory here. I don't know if this is retconned or if this is more like an expansion of the lore or what, but the whole, like, how the Tails Beast came to attack the Leaf or whatever. And it has to do with the fact that it was happening at the time Naruto was being born.
Right.
And so it's like, I always assumed, judging, and this is based on, like, very limited knowledge of Naruto's, the original series, but I always assumed that, like, the Tails Beast was this monster that they had to contain and they put it in Naruto. Right. Now it seems more like the Tails Beast is in Naruto because it was in his mom when she was giving birth.
The next episode will go more into that.
A little more complicated than that.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, but and that was, and again, minor thing, but they kind of point out the fact that, like, this clan, this Eddie's clan or whatever, also are the ones who invented the sealing jutsu, and they put the sealing jutsu on Naruto's mom. But then if you're in child labor or if you're in labor or in childbirth, that seal can be broken for a short time.
Right.
So it's kind of risky to put it in someone giving birth, but I guess they didn't really expect that or maybe they weren't, you know.
Well, I mean, you put it in a lady, eventually, you know, she might wind up pregnant.
Yeah. I mean, there could be other risks to doing
it. They gave a specific reason why it's like, well, and you might ask, why didn't we put it into dudes? Well, it's because of some reason.
Yeah, and there could be other reasons. Like, I'm not necessarily convinced there's any more or less risk in doing this. It could be less risk. Yeah. I don't know. More risk, I mean.
Well, and they couldn't have known that they were going to be attacked at that time either.
Right. It was all planned, like, secret clandestine mission to do this.
Like, Minato's also like, don't worry, I've got, like, three Anbu Black Ops outside.
Like, yeah, that's...
Those dudes get hit by a breeze and they fall over.
Yeah. It's like, those dudes are trash. Come on.
That is.
Those are the guys with the goofy white masks, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Who, by the way, you may have seen them in other situations where they always lose. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, their entire existence is basically get rocked and hype up whoever else is there.
It's just like, oh man, this dude beat, look at what this dude did to all these Abu Black Ops guys. He must be super strong. It's like, yeah, but every dude does that to them.
They're like they're like the police force of this world in the same way the police force of the My Hero Academia world is, you know? Like, they just can't hold a candle to anybody.
But they're supposed to be so cool. Like, Kakashi was hyped up. Like, he used to be the commander of the Anbu Black Ops.
But here's the thing.
That was Itachi.
No, Kakashi too.
Well, she was never the commander of the Anbu.
I don't know if he was the commander, but he was part of
like a big old head honcho type.
The thing is, in this series, if I've learned anything, there are named ninjas who all have special jutsu powers, and then there are these guys who are just nobodies who can be defeated.
Right.
They're like scrub ninjas, basically.
Yeah, they're basically crap.
I mean, like, I've never seen a normal ninja in this show who wasn't Black Ops. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Have we ever seen a ninja who is just a ninja and ninja with a special jutsu? I'll take your silence as a no.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's been like one or two, but you know.
Well, I mean, we've seen plenty of like nameless scrubs who just kind of go on screen, throw a kunai and just die. So
yeah.
Okay.
The problem is the Anbu also do that.
Yeah, like they're no better.
But going back to the whole thing, so also we're still trying to like really tie Naruto and Sasuke together. So here,
oh god,
Kushina meets little baby Sasuke before she goes off.
God,
oh, this is so cheesy.
I know. I'm like, oh, seriously?
They'll be great friends.
You guys ever watch the Mr. Plinkett reviews of the Star Wars prequels?
Yes. People have definitely seen those.
Okay, do you remember the part where he was talking about, like, one of the worst things they could do is have, like, a little, like, baby Luke Skywalker meet a little baby Han Solo?
Oh, God.
I think that's exactly what this reminded me of.
Oh, yes.
It's like, how cliche and, you know, how much of a convenience is this that they just happen to meet?
It rhymes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I get it. I guess he would have been in the village, but so cheesy.
I guess they are kind of the same age. I guess they
would have. Well, she even went as far as to say that, oh, they'll be at school together and blah, blah,
but
blah.
I thought Naruto was supposed to be older than Sasuke.
Not anymore. If either you're remembering wrong or they just messed up.
Because Naruto kept getting held back.
Naruto was supposed to have been held back several times, but it's like also he's exactly the same age as these other kids.
So he wasn't really held back.
So what?
I mean, the only way that scene could have been worse is... And maybe she did say this, I don't remember, but she goes, baby Naruto, meet baby Sasuke.
I'm pretty sure that's something that happened.
No. Oh,
no.
Fortunately.
You guys will be rivals.
We'll be friends.
Anyway. Fuck that. Let's talk about Hunter x Hunter.
Yes.
Hunter x Hunter episode 140, join battle and open battle. In this episode, Killua's on the shit list, so now he's got to have like 7 butlers around all the time.
Yep.
Which is great because the butlers are cool.
Including the granny butler, who's like a freaking titan.
She's awesome.
I mean, she's like old lady Bisky.
Yeah.
You know, like, she could fuck all their shit up in, like, 20 seconds.
She's obviously, like 95 years old and also could punch directly through a, steel plate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aliko's like, give me your fingernail. She's like, of course, dear. Rip.
It's like, what the hell was that?
And then Kill was like, shit, I fucked up.
Well, I mean, at least it got rid of her.
That's bad, though, because now he won't be able to make a wish.
So it's always all of the demands have to come from the same person?
Yes. Yeah. It starts on one person, it's completely locked onto that person.
Well, he said he can still give an order.
Yeah, which we don't really understand what that entails yet.
It's a different sort of thing. Like, there's rules that only he knows about, and that's one of them. Like, it's going to get explained, but like, he's not shit out of luck just yet.
So, yeah, now I asked to run around with, remember Coin Dude? Coin Dude's pretty cool. Too.
He actually got a new voice. He sounded different to me, and I had to look it up, and apparently the original voice for him didn't come back for this for some reason.
I mean, I guess, yeah, it's been literally it's the entire opposite end of the series.
Yeah.
Since this dude showed up. And also Canary's here.
Yeah.
She's cool.
And some other girl who looks cool.
Was that a girl?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
She's not a Zoldyck, so. But yeah, there's like super special, super duper, like, lockdown rules that Killua was under right now. Yeah. They make the point to have a little tiny chibi Killua, like, knocked off a ledge by Class A or something.
Yeah.
I forgot.
And then.
Level 5.
And then Killua got a phone call.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got a phone call from Leorio. Yeah. I almost forgot. It's like, it's Leorio!
Like, goddamn, he's back.
It's been literally years.
Yeah.
Like, it's been literally since we first did the show ranking.
Yeah.
It's been so long, but like, I can't remember if Leorio was always this unhinged.
He was always a hothead.
Yeah,
like he was always really cool, but he was that guy that, like, if you fucked with him, he'd whip out a knife and cut you.
Well, he's got better. He's got more than a knife now.
Oh, his knife power is.
I forgot how Matt Mercer sounds as Leorio too. Like his performance as Leorio is like way different than his normal stuff.
Like if I think about it, I can hear it when he's just talking normally, but when he starts yelling, it's like what?
Yeah, I mean, I love Leorio.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, so Leorio's power is, it's fucking crazy town. Like, it's really fucking cool.
Before we get to that.
Yeah, we haven't gotten there yet, saw, I mean, I don't know what's going to go on, so I'll describe it since I can't accidentally spoil anything. Well, but what we saw in the episode was he got real pissed off at Gene for not having seen Gon, and so he, like, smashed his fist down on a podium, breaking the podium, but then you see like electric beam like shoot across the ground, and then his fist comes up from under the table where Gene is sitting, and it like clocks him right in the jaw.
It was fucking awesome. And then everyone literally gets up and cheers.
Yes, that was the best part. Everyone cheers.
Everyone's like, yeah.
Everybody was so into it.
Everyone hates Ging, and now everyone wants to vote for Leorio, president of the Hunter Association.
Like, and the funny girl was like, go watch the clip on the website.
Oh, like, immediately.
Yeah. Like, even, like I think it's Pion who is, like, doing the whole, like, MC thing, and she's just like, oh, shit, you guys should watch this.
It's totally going to be on the website, don't worry.
Dude, Ging just got punched in the face.
It was awesome.
Yeah!
I mean, I'm so glad that happened. At the same time, I'm actually worried for Leorio because isn't Gene like super crazy strong?
Ging doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Also, it didn't actually even hurt him a bit.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he got like.
Still, I mean, like, if it was anybody else, they'd want to retaliate, you know, I guess. But. Yeah, anyway. Yeah, very cool. Very cool Leorio comeback moment.
Such a great way to reintroduce a character.
Basically, like, yeah, you know this guy that you've been mad at the entire series? Well, fuck him.
Also, here's a great way to reintroduce Leorio.
Yeah.
Also, they like, call Karapika, and he can't deal anything because he's very busy being incredibly cool in a suit.
Yeah. I mean, I think I can say what he's doing without any spoilers.
The anime will go into that.
It will?
Yeah, that's the last episode.
Oh, okay. Well, shit.
So he's off. He's still off doing something. I think the last time we saw him, as far as I remember from watching the show,
he was in the mafia and he was going after the eyes of his clansmen.
Okay,
like he was using mafia connections to try and get the eyeballs back.
Yeah, I don't remember the mafia part, but I definitely remember him going after.
It's been so long.
Yeah, it's been a long time. So,
well, I mean, he was like the mafia bodyguard in that whole arc for the. You know, fortune teller girl.
Yeah, yeah, and he was going to go after. Yeah, he was going to go after that. I just remember him leaving to do that, but that we haven't seen him for a long time, so I'm assuming he's been doing that for a long time. But I guess we'll find out later. But yeah, everyone showed up in this episode.
Yeah, Melody was there. Moral was there. Oh yeah, like Killa was just like, "Hey, we need you guys to." Or Goto was like, "Clear out the entire hospital."
And then Leorio was like, fuck, I can't do that.
And Leorio, like, you ever been so mad you just eat your phone?
He did do that.
And then Moral was like, oh, clear out the whole hospital? Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's the difference. But see, the thing is, it's like, I think that they're trying to show the difference in the kinds of characters that are like Moral is kind of calm and collected, and Leorio is just unhinged and crazy. But like,
Moral's also like a top hunter.
That's what I was about to say. Like, it's like, it's more, that's the impression I get. It's more about Moral just being like
that important.
He's just like at the top of his game where Leorio still feels like a scrub.
And like, if the Zodiac called, they would be like, you want us to blow up this hospital with everyone in it? We'll do that.
Yeah. Like, they would, it's sort of like Moral, it was one of Netero's top guys. Like, he wasn't a Zodiac, but he was so.
When they said, we need some dudes to go kill all the ants, they got Moral.
Yeah, like, he was the first guy they went and got.
But like, they also got Nove, but that didn't work out too well.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Well, Nove did his job.
I mean, he got shook to hell.
Yeah. But then, like, it shows how smart Moral is in so far as being like, well, we don't have to evacuate the hospital. We'll just build another hospital out in the parking lot.
Yeah.
But specifically, like, he's like, hey, Nove, I need your help.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
And it also shows Leorio the type of respect that Moro has for Gon and Killua, that he'd just go that forward to try to save him.
Just on Killua's word that they need this to happen to save him.
Yep.
You know, it's like they've been through enough shit that he knows that if Killua says, hey, I can do this, he can do this.
And I mean, no one asked him to do this either, but he goes to the voting center or the headquarters or whatever. And the only reason he does this is because he knows that Yin is there and he just wants to confront him. He's just like, look, your son's been wanting to meet you forever. Why have you gone see him?
Yeah.
Or like that and the fact that they think that maybe if he saw him, that it might wake him up or something.
Yeah. Like that, that's sort of why
at least
I love
try.
Leorio. Yeah. It's like why I love Leorio is he knows that he can't do anything that way, but he's like, God damn, I'm going to drag Ging's like dipshit ass there myself if I have to.
Oh, dude, I'm always in for a character who doesn't follow the rules. Like anybody who's willing to just be like, fuck your protocol. I'm going to punch you.
He just punched the hell out of him.
Note to self, all you have to do to please C. Kohler is be like, I don't follow the rules.
Well, I don't mean like that. I mean like when stuff is like when there's stupid rules, like because you see it so much in anime, and it's based, you know, it comes from the Japanese culture of like everybody has to follow the rules all the time, and everybody has to be, you know, so polite and everything. And then you get this character who's just like, if your rule is stupid, break it, man. Like, don't follow that rule. That's a dumb rule. He's totally right. It's like, Gene, don't be an asshole. Go see your son. I get that. Mm-hmm.
Leorio is pretty much the audience surrogate during that scene.
Yeah, like he does the one thing we've all always wanted to do.
He does the thing that none of the other characters are willing to do.
Exactly. It's like, oh, Punch King? I don't know if I should. God damn it, I already did it.
So yeah, that's a good moment. That's like a top 10 Hunter x Hunter moment.
Top 5.
Punch gang, get money.
Yes. And keep in mind that any dipshit can become the president of the Hunter Association because everyone is a candidate.
Everyone's a candidate.
And everyone's voting. And everyone just saw Leori will be a goddamn badass.
There are so many good moments in this arc.
Oh, it's amazing.
So, anyway, that'll about do it for this episode of the Toonami Escape Podcast. Thank you, B-Dubs.
Okay.
Thank you, C-Kohler.
No problem.
Thank you, Mora.
No problem.
We'll see you guys next week for episode 149. Good night. Later.